to what God is doing. So I'm going to pray for us for just this time, that God would instruct our time and would bring clarity, and then we'll jump in. So Father, I'm thankful this morning for an opportunity to look at what you're doing in the world and what this family is all about. And I pray that you would stir in our hearts. I know that it's going to be primarily informational, but would maybe a piece of information connect with a longing in our hearts that you are moving us toward in some kind of engagement? Maybe it's just to pray differently or to understand what we're a part of, but I pray that you would do that in our midst this morning. Thank you for these great people. I pray that you bless them. Thank you for their effort even to get here on a Saturday morning. It's not always easy, so I'm thankful for that, and I'm thankful for this privilege to be here with them. In Jesus' name, amen. Hey, so Rachel and I, we've been married for 17 years. We have the two boys that I mentioned. I'm going to tell another funny story about them tonight. But we have the two boys, Blaine and Jude, who are 12 and 9. We talked to them this morning. They were there with a dog who seems kind of depressed that mom is gone, but Jude takes good care of the dog. Rachel and I actually grew up in the same area in Ohio. So we're from the Cleveland, Akron, Ohio area, and that's where part of our family still lives, and so we go back there every once in a while. But we really met when we went to the same college at Indiana Wesleyan University. And Rachel was studying Spanish, and I was studying English, and then we went to be missionaries in France. So that's kind of how it works out. But we met, and God really affirmed his call of ministry on our lives, and we moved right after college. We got married and went to New York, where we studied at ATS in NIAC, and also were on staff at a church in New Jersey for 5 years, doing youth and worship ministry primarily. Both of us were on staff at that church, and then we went to France. And we were initially sent to France, and I might tell a piece of this story tonight, but we were initially sent to France to minister in Toulouse, in the southwest part of France, but ministry plans change. I don't know if I've ever met a missionary who it turned out exactly the way they thought it was going to turn out when they signed up to be a missionary. They said, yeah, I'll go to that place, and even the country that they're sure of, like, something happens, you know, political things happen. I mean, it's interesting, even in our own, and I'll give you some insider kind of things, but, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, Burkina Faso was one of our easiest places. We were taking so many short-term trips and all that kind of stuff. It's actually become one of our more difficult places in terms of danger these days. Now, in the capital, where we do a lot, it's pretty safe. But there are other places in the country that have become difficult, and those socio-political realities, as well as team dynamics. You know, I just heard some bad news, actually, from Tim this morning about one of our partners there in Senegal. And those kind of things, when a health crisis hits, or it changes the dynamic of the team, and then we have to figure out, okay, well, and we had a kind of a personnel change, and we had to move from Toulouse to Paris, but God really blessed our ministry there in Paris, and we were really honored to be in that place for that time. We came back to America, fully intending to go back to France. All we had were a few suitcases, and God once again redirected our plans. And so we moved to Colorado 6 years ago to begin working with Envision. So I'll talk about Envision here in just a minute, but one of our specialized structures, I was the international sites director for a couple of years there, and then moved into overall leadership of Envision for the rest of our time. So we served with Envision for 5 years. And it was a year ago, not quite, but right around this time was when we were making our transition into the development role with the Alliance on the vice president team there. So that's been a little bit of our journey. As I move into what Alliance Missions is, Rachel was joking yesterday that, you know, we went out with what we now call Access, primarily our church planter team. And then we moved to Envision. And this week on Wednesday, Rachel starts with Marketplace Ministries as one of their administrative assistants and office managers. And so it's just left for Comma, and our family will have checked all the boxes, you know, for Alliance Missions. So I'll tell you more about that if this is kind of new stuff to you. I'll make sure my clicker's on here. So tonight, we're going to unpack this vision statement that we sort of codified about 6 months, maybe a little bit more, 9 months ago, all of Jesus for all the world. So I'm not going to go really into detail about this morning. Come back tonight and you'll hear about all of Jesus for all the world. But really, this is kind of the big why of the Alliance. So last year when Dr. Stumbo was here, you might have heard him talk about, and I actually heard it referenced a couple of times, and it's really good when language sticks. I heard you say a couple of times we're a Christ-centered Acts 1-8 family last night. That's really who we are. That's who we are as a people. We are a Christ-centered, we're all about Jesus. We're an Acts 1-8, so we care about our local communities and our regions and the people who live close to us but are quite different from us, the Samarias, and we care about the ends of the earth. And we're a family. We do this together. That's the who we are. And what do we do? Well, do you remember the four verbs that Dr. Stumbo introduced a number of years ago? Does anybody know that? You get a special prize in heaven if you know these. Love, proclaim, reach, launch. Good. So love, proclaim, reach, launch. That's really what we do. We are a people who love and we proclaim the good news in word and deed. And we reach all of the people who don't have access to the gospel, and we launch more into that service. This Christmas, or the year end, if you follow the Alliance on Facebook or on Instagram or Twitter, and if you don't, I'd encourage you to do that, actually. It's a great way to stay up to date with all of the news stories and what's going on. But if you'll see sort of a lot of new stories connected to the theme, We Will Launch. And we're doing that because this year, we had a challenge to send 60 new workers overseas. Some of you were tracking with that challenge, and you might have seen, some of you said, I think I've seen you before, and you might have seen me pleading with you on a video to say, we can do this together, come on, it's not too late. And we did, and my video team made this twin video of me, and some of you saw that, and I've taken a lot of grief for that. Video where I had like a double me saying stuff, and I wish I never would have done it now. But something worked because somebody came forward actually having been motivated by this desire to reach 60 new workers, or send 60 new workers, I'm sorry, to reach a new and different kind of people. And this person who lived in the southern part of the country said, you know, I've never really partnered with the Alliance before. I've never given to the Alliance financially, but I'm motivated by this desire and this mission, so I'd like to give. And this donor gave a $500,000 gift as their very first gift and said, hey, I'd like to motivate people. Could they fill up this match? And that match was filled up. And then a church who was selling a property said, well, we want to get in on this. And they said, how about we're going to donate, we're going to tie the proceed of our of the sale of this property in a pretty big city. It would be kind of like you guys selling a property. You know, if you sell a property here and we sell one in Ohio, it's not the same thing. You know, in Ohio, you get like $1 million for the building, maybe, you know, 800,000. In this building, who knows, you know, 10 million, 12 million, I don't know. And so I'm not encouraging you to sell the building. But when it came time to do that for this church, they said, you know, we'd like to give $400,000 and challenge other churches. And the minute they did that, many churches rallied together. And so this year, we were able to send actually 74 workers this year because of all of that financial participation. You know, the numbers are only just a byproduct of engagement, but this year, the Great Commission Day offering brought in three times the most that it has ever brought in because of that desire to send these new workers. And so that's what this is all about, is to bring workers and lean in. But the who we are as a Christ-centered Acts 1-8 family, what we do is we love, proclaim, reach, and we launch. So why do we do that? Well, come back tonight and I'll talk about it. It's because of all of Jesus for all the world. And really, this is about the full embrace that Christ has for us. And I'm not going to ruin my talk for tonight. Okay. So what is changing? Has anybody heard that things are changing in the way the Alliance does missions? Maybe you've heard that. Maybe you've heard that some of actually the funding structures are beginning to change. I'm going to talk about that very briefly because most of you couldn't care less. And rightfully so, because a lot of it's just kind of internal. But what's changing? Well, part of what's changing is not just the way we approach our structures and all that, although I'll get to that. It's actually the context of the way the West, primarily in North America, does missions. So what do I mean? Well, you can't see this. That's my bad. And actually, I can't really see this. But let me basically tell you that this is kind of a timeline, and I'm happy to get you this PowerPoint presentation after. Douglas has a copy. Everybody has a copy, I guess. Really, this walks through pre-World War II, the 60s, the 70s, the 90s, and 2000s. And essentially, pre-World War II, I would just say, is primarily contexts of mission that were recently colonized. So pre-World War II, you think about places that the Alliance was sending people like West Africa, India, and to Southeast Asia, places where Westerners had gone. And when we think of colonization, we think about Africa especially, which is a continent that had a lot of negative things happen, sometimes evil things happen. Certainly the slave trade was an evil thing that happened after colonization. But there were also Western missionaries alongside of it, and it got a little muddy at times. Like, are you here to tell us how to do culture, or are you here to tell us about God, or what's going on? But in that time, there were a lot of good things that were happening, you know? We had a variety of missionaries. There were multitaskers. So at the very beginning of our mission-sending movement, and I'll talk a little bit about Simpson tonight, and you've heard those stories, but it's good to always bring us back to how this started. Simpson was looking around going, man, whatever it takes, we got to get the gospel to the world. So he was actually quite radical in the way he sent women and men. He was quite radical in the way he was sending African Americans in the 19th century. Before, I mean, this is way before even there were the civil rights movement and all these things. He was going, look, I don't see a distinction here. God sees people equally. Let's mobilize people for the kingdom. And actually, what started as a really good thing turned a little sour in our own movement when pressures from our culture, and we saw less and less people of color being sent as missionaries. And thankfully, by God's grace, we're seeing a change in that again. But that took a long time to heal, and some bad things were done. But they were multitaskers. There were doctors, and there were teachers, and there were anybody who could get the job done, we'll send you. At the very beginning, I will say that most of those missionaries that got sent out anticipated difficulty. They anticipated resistance. Many of them going to Africa, especially or India for the first time, anticipated that they may not return. And so you've heard those stories of missionaries going out with caskets being packed in the boats. That's a real thing. You know, and you saw John do the Alliance World Tour. How many of you were here last year when John did the Alliance World Tour for you? Okay. So on Alliance World Tour, I believe the version that he did, we're on Alliance World Tour 3.1 now or something. But I think the version he did talked about going into Congo and John Condit being this young guy, and then everyone dies and there's one, you know, missionary there and now 2.3 million believers in sub-Saharan Africa. But the reality was that was the case. But we were a multi-specialization, without using those words, mission at the beginning. Why? Because we needed all kinds of people to do all kinds of things. We were going into places where we needed to send doctors with others because there wasn't modern healthcare. And for a lot of our workers, they were like, what am I going to do in these places and the far reaches of the world? Then in the 1960s, so this is post-World War II, we really started thinking about, okay, you know, rather than having kind of a Bible and like a ministry institute, Simpson was sending out irregulars, let's go to Bible college. Things were getting a little bit more formal. And we were really engaging in more kind of conventions, like big missionary rallies and at camps and at district level and those kind of things, where at the beginning, it was sort of like there was just a branch of mission, and people were taking pledges, and we had this A-Life magazine, and I brought a bunch of our resources, by the way, that you can have today or tomorrow. And it became this convention thing. And then we moved to really a clergy emphasis. So we started thinking about building national churches that were sustainable. So we had planted a lot of these churches, and now they were starting to be networks of churches. So now we were beginning to move into a consultant kind of basis, but we had a high clergy emphasis. So we kind of became a single specialization for a while. We really were thinking about clergy ministry, national church building, and some kinds of church planting, but the early kind of emphasis on teachers and doctors and all of those kind of people kind of went away because of the phase that we were in as a mission. And so we were, you know, thinking about church tours. This is when home assignment and missionary tours started. You know, in the 60s is when missionaries started going around and visiting churches and telling their stories, and then kind of local church partnerships and those kind of things began to develop. But we were really thinking then about GCF. So the GCF, the Great Commission Fund, was really born in this era, even though it wasn't actually called the GCF until the 80s. So the GCF is a relatively newer term, and we're not actually going away from that term, I don't think, but it's the concept of GCF came at that time. And then in the 2000s, things started to change again. I forgot to mention one thing, that in the 60s and 70s, there were two sort of branches that organically grew up. One was called CAMA, and that was our relief and development arm that kind of was a part of things and then was a little separate and now is back part of things a little bit more intentionally. And what we called IFAP, which was the International Fellowship of Alliance Professionals, that now is called Marketplace Ministries. That was kind of also a loose group of people that we really blessed, but it wasn't a part of the organized strategy. So it was like, hey, if you're a business person and you come to us and you're moving to Hong Kong and you happen to be an Alliance person, we'll go, hey, we'll bless you and we would love to connect with you. But we didn't really see IFAP as really a part of the core of what the Alliance was doing. But then again, in the 2000s, things started to change. What changed in the world in the 2000s? Well, globalization truly became a reality. Now we are truly interconnected, and this region is to blame or to be thanked. In many ways, you know, we're interconnected. You know, as a kid growing up, I remember my aunt and uncle being missionaries in Africa, and we would send these little cassettes that we would record to them. So this is the mid-80s or early 80s, and it would take like a month or two to get there, and they would listen to it, and then they would record one, and then they would send it back. And so every 4 months, we would hear from them, and you know, that kind of thing, and that's the way it was. And now today, I mean, I literally, right now, could set up a Zoom call with anyone, anywhere. I mean, we're talking anywhere. Like, in the remotest villages in Africa, we could set up a Zoom call, and the connection could be relatively stable. And so things have changed, and that also changed the way that we saw national churches, and national churches were able to interact with us. And it also meant that in the stability and growth of national churches that were becoming self-reproducing, we had to ask ourselves, okay, so where do we go? And what kind of ministries is appropriate for North America to go do? And that has led to a new conversation with Marketplace Ministries and CAMA and Envision and Access. Because the truth is, the reason and the driver that the Alliance does what it does is really gospel disparity, the disparity of gospel access. And that will always be our driver until Jesus comes, I'm telling you that. But there has been a new kind of understanding or embrace of what it means to minister to the whole person. Again, it's actually where we started, but we're going back to that partly because out of necessity, the next places that we've got to go or we need to send people aren't really happy for reverends to show up. But they're quite happy for doctors to show up or business professionals who can actually give true value to the community and to the city, but also bring the love and gospel presence of Jesus. Do we have the Christian video close? If we can show this, I think some of you have seen this before. Take a look hold on one second. Asia,
impoverished villages.
Yeah, this is the Regions Beyond one. Do we have the, did I tell you the Regions Beyond one for this morning? Okay, let's watch this one. Thank you. Let's watch this one.
On an isolated mountainside.
You saw this last week, maybe.
Impoverished villagers are learning trades to better provide for their families. As they work, they hear the story of Jesus in their own language. Generations before them struggled as subsistence farmers, living in fear of evil spirits. Alliance workers are here, helping these villagers have a better life and hope in Jesus. Near a dusty plain in Southeast Asia, littered with landmines and remnants of war, a network of home churches is bringing life where death once reigned. People are meeting Jesus. Sisters share with brothers. Neighbors share with neighbors. Former enemies are finding unity in Christ. In this area once considered a wasteland for the gospel, vibrant alliance fellowships are springing up.
Rich.
In a sprawling West African city,
my iPad.
A young man once called cursed for his physical deformity and turned away by his family is hearing a different message. Love and acceptance. A family to belong to. A new identity in Jesus. As many of our workers discipled him, his life was transformed. He can't help but do the same for others now. God is opening up new pathways to ministries like these around the world. As a movement of Alliance believers, we follow Jesus' example and commands, loving and helping people in his name. We are serving communities through vocational expertise that impacts the whole person and their society. We are multiplying church networks that create even more churches to serve the unreached in their communities and beyond. And we are developing people who will disciple others to be leaders with a passion for Jesus. From our founding, Alliance people have come together to take the gospel to the neglected places where Christ's name has not been named. Today, more than 3 billion people still have little to no chance of hearing the good news. But God is forging new pathways to these peoples once out of reach. He is calling us to join Him, to follow Him to regions beyond.
So some of you saw that last week. This is the first time any of these videos that we're showing this weekend have had Chinese subtitles. And so thank you to Douglas and the team and our video team to do that for the first time. We're hoping to be able to do that for multiple languages as we go forward so that everybody can understand what's going on. But in that Regions Beyond video that some of you saw last week as well, we told three stories. We're not live streaming this, right, or recording it or anything. Okay, good. So I'm just going to tell you where these things actually are. And many times in our videos, you hear us talk generally about regions because of persecution towards those workers or the lack of access to those places, and so we have to be very careful. But the first story that you saw, I think the first story or the second story was in South China, primarily among Hmong immigrants in that village that is, it's like going back 100 years almost in that place, very underdeveloped, but primarily using basically crafts and marketplace kind of ministries to get into that place. I'm going to tell a really crazy story about Cambodia. That was the other story from Southeast Asia about a guy named Kong tonight who had his eye pop out of his head and come back in, so you can hear that tonight. It's a little teaser trailer. It's a graphic story. But that network of churches expanding in Cambodia right now is amazing. And a lot of it has been just facilitated, like some of our workers throwing fuel on a fire that was like kind of kindling, and now boom, it's going. And then the third story was in Guinea, West Africa, from a guy. And that story was cool because it really was a guy who was passed from person to person or worker to worker, network to network, until he finally became a believer. He moved around the country and kept getting, like, you know, handed off until the next person. And I'll tell one of those stories tomorrow morning as well. But those are those three stories. Those three stories indicate that the regions beyond for us, it's not like we've never been to China before, never been to Cambodia before, but there are regions within these places that we have not had access to. There are tribes or villages or other people groups that live within countries that we're now getting access to for the very first time, and that's what God is doing. But our posture and our role is constantly sort of shifting and changing. So I kind of talked about this, and I'll just run through this really quickly. So at the beginning, there was a lot of breadth proclamation and healing, and there was these Simpsons irregulars that he called them, which weren't really seminary trained, but had enough Bible and missions to be sent out and go do the work. We had schools for children and church planting, and networks of churches were being born. But as we moved into the next season, it was really about proclamation and discipleship and church planting. And so for a lot of us who have grown up in the Alliance, that singularity of focus has been really what we've heard about. In fact, we've really considered ourselves, well, we're a church planting movement, or we are a discipleship movement. And that's not going away. That focus, the majority of our workers are still doing that kind of work. But that's not actually how we started. We started as more of a breadth of a movement to minister to the whole person, because we realized that a lot of these places needed a variety of attention and different kinds of expertise to get into the country. So it's not that that season is completely done, it's just that it won't be the only thing that we talk about going forward. So we're moving back to breadth. And Tim Crouch, our Vice President for International Ministries for Alliance Missions, talks about meaningful, impactful presence, which is actually value added to those places. That is a meaningful presence in the community long-term for the whole person, and obviously for their eternal soul as well. But not just thinking about trying to drop in, throw tracks at people and run out, but to think about what does it mean to have lasting, impactful presence. There are real political reasons for this as well, you know, and like I mentioned, but I'll just say it again, the majority of the places that are left to be reached that we can send workers into are not going to go in with clergy visas. They're just not. So many of us in this room, actually, and there might be one or two in this room, who think, oh, I'm not seminary trained. But actually, verse these days, that people are being sent later in their lives, and wanted to send you for your, you know, at 27, 28, that kind of thing. And now we're sending lots of people in their 40s and 50s who actually have skills. And I talk about that because we were sent with one of those ones who didn't have I always say, like, if I get, you know, let go from my job, I don't have a lot of options. I can teach in seminary or go be a pastor, and that's kind of it. I mean, I guess I could make my way in business now because I've learned some things, but, you know, a lot of us, we got trained to do certain things, but what the world is asking for is, yes, seminary training and some, of course, we're going to vet and train and equip our people. We're not sending people without training. But if there are life skills or experience in business or medicine or other things, that's frankly quite attractive to the mission right now to send. We're looking at, of course, evangelism and discipleship in all that we do, but it's sometimes a little bit more of a partnership with the local church who knows maybe what the strategy would be most effective in that place. So a new face for Alliance Missions. A growing embrace of this holism, the demanding context of living among people who lack gospel access, the disparity of gospel access. Maybe that's intuitive, you understand what I mean by that. All I mean is, in a lot of places in the world, it takes a bunch of touch points before anyone will hear the gospel. Like I said last night, even in places like France, I never met another Christian outside of a church building, ever, in years. You don't run into other Christians. In this town, even though this would be a much less Christian town than where we live in Colorado, I still pass a lot of churches driving around. There are still churches. Now, I don't know if they're all good churches. I don't know if people are coming to faith. But the chance of meeting another Christian is still higher here in San Jose than it is in Tunisia, where there's a couple hundred believers total in the whole country. So there are more believers here this morning than there are in some whole countries in the world. And that's just a lack of gospel access because there's just not enough Christians to go around to communicate the gospel. And so that's where we have to go. A breadth of vocational skills, I've already talked about this. And so we need specialized structures to help us grow expertise in all of these areas. So let me talk about those. And I'm sorry for how small these words are that nobody can read except for me up here. I will say that one of the good news about this change is that there is more room for more Alliance people to serve in more ways than ever before. There's more space for all kinds of people to serve with the Alliance because our world has changed And I think our perspective has changed a little bit in a healthy way, that we won't be just the saviors from North America coming. I just was talking to a guy who asked me to do this podcast coming up about the change of the role of the West in missions. The rise of the global South is a real thing. The most vibrant missionary movements will likely come from Africa, South America, and Asia than they will from the West. That is either something to grieve or celebrate or both. The only reason we would grieve that is because the West has abdicated sometimes its vitality of spiritual life in God. But it's something to celebrate because in places where there was literally no churches 100 years ago, there are missionaries being sent out. That's something to celebrate. But some of the role of the West will need to be shifted in terms of who's leading the charge at times. But the West still has way more financial resources than most of these places ever will. So how do we partner in a healthy way without being domineering or telling people what to do, but realizing that we're not just going to keep all the money for ourselves either, in very crass terms. We're not just going to worry about our own buildings or our own things. There are many places around the world that, a little bit more investment makes a huge difference. So there's more room. So we're changing the way we structure. So Alliance Missions, when we've talked about Alliance Missionaries, in the past, you've really thought about the workers from that third structure from the left, which we now call Access. So when you think of Alliance Missionaries or international workers, a lot of times those who were primarily supported by the GCF and those who you've heard most of the stories from were from one of those structures. Now, we've told other structures, you've heard about CAMA, and you've had those kind of workers come in, but really when we say Alliance Missionary in the past, we've really been talking about one of the four ways that we've been doing ministry over the last 15 to 20 years in organized structures. How did these four come up? Well, we just kept adding structures to meet need. It was really a missions word, contextualization, that drove us to structures. In other words, how do we make a good context of the way we do missions? And so we go, okay, we'll spring up with these different things. So I'll walk us through these, and then we'll head towards the end here. But we have CAMA, Marketplace, Access, and Envision. So let's walk them through. CAMA, most of you are familiar with it, response to disasters globally and partners locally to restore communities and alleviate poverty. Disaster relief, community development. We have 40 full-time workers who are working with CAMA. CAMA's financial structure, and again, some of this is like, who cares for some of you, but some of you do care. CAMA's finances were brought into the Alliance's budget this year. If you've been partnering with CAMA, I'd ask you to continue to partner in the way that you do over the next year or two as we figure out how everybody benefits in different ways from financial contributions. Right now, if you give a dollar to the GCF, it doesn't directly impact CAMA yet, but it will soon. And so we're trying to figure out how, we've got it under the view of the way the Alliance does the budget, but we haven't yet really melded the budgets together, and so we're getting there. But CAMA is no less, a CAMA worker is no less an Alliance missionary than somebody who works for Access. I want to say this a couple of times because this is a pretty big culture shift for us. We've kind of thought about CAMA or Marketplace or Envision as happy add-ons to what the Alliance is doing, but we're actually saying this is a core of what we do and who we are. You know, CAMA workers are also responsible for planting churches in all the places that they live and are seeing many people come to faith. And so it's not as if there's only one structure who's planting churches. All of them are doing that. And I could tell you lots of great CAMA stories around the world. Marketplace Ministries has about 170 workers around the world right now. It's our second largest structure. It facilitates marketplace professionals who bring expertise to a community to disciple those around them. We've got a guy in India, Kevin Sandel, who is running this business and has seen many, many people come to faith. He's just a Christian businessman who is in IT, actually, and just said, hey, we can lead a company differently with Christian values. And many go, I see something different. I feel something different. I want to follow Jesus. I'm going to tell a Marketplace Ministry story tomorrow morning that some of you have heard if you heard me at council, but I never get sick of telling the story. And if it's your second time hearing it, tough. It'll be fine. but it's a marketplace ministry story about a worker who was leading a cafe, who met a young Syrian woman, and the rest is a very powerful story. So our marketplace ministries folks are having great impact. We have a couple in Mauritania, one of the least reached countries in Africa, with marketplace ministries that has seen a catalytic church planting movement explode in the last 12 to 18 months. They're there with marketplace ministries. They would not be allowed to go with access. But they have seen actually hundreds of people come to faith. It was kind of like that Vili story that I told last night through marketplace ministries. The way this happens is essentially, you know, somebody here and I, you know, would say to me, hey, I'm moving overseas with a company for 3 or 4 years on a contract. I'm moving to wherever, you know, to extend the reach of Google or whoever you work for. And this happens all the time. But I love the alliance and I want to make an impact. And so we go through sort of a vetting process and say, okay, here's what our hope for outcomes would be for you. That you would intentionally share the gospel, that you would partner with some local churches, that in your marketplace area, you could influence some small groups or whatever. And so we don't have a lot of direct, like, oversight supervision. Hey, we're going to tell you what to do. A lot of times the need and the strategy comes from that marketplace worker. But we are in relationship and network, and we're really thrilled about what God is doing through marketplace ministries. Access is really the structure that most of you have thought about when you've talked about GCF missionaries. But you struggled to find a name. And so we named it Access. Why? Well, there's a couple of things going on. If you see in the logo, some of you can see the two arrows, and you see the X, you know, X, access for gospel access, creating gospel access in new places. And really, this structure's whole goal is to try to go into places that do not have gospel access. That's really the driver, to see churches planted. But they do a variety of things as well. There are access workers who are medical, who are in business, but that's really their driver. Proclaim the gospel, multiply networks of faith communities among the least reached people of the world. Those two arrows are really going in two directions, both bringing gospel access, but also seeing networks of churches partner together well, both from the U.S. and around the world, to see synergy happen in that place. And it really takes all of us. Access workers are primarily clergy trained, primarily. Some kind of, you know, Bible and seminary degree at some level, or a non-traditional pathway, but Rachel and I were sent out. Now, we didn't know it at the time, but now we would be sent out as access workers. And then the final structure is Envision. Envision identifies and develops missional leaders through short-term mission experiences and innovative mission strategies. So I'll pause here for just a second. I had the opportunity to lead Envision for 5 years, and so this one's close to my heart as well. Envision does a couple of things. One, it creates on-ramps for people who need development in their own missional understanding and experience while serving. So some of you have heard of YWAM or have encouraged, and some of you have heard of Adventures in Missions or Campus Crusade International and all those kind of things, Crew now. Envision was in some ways the Alliance's response to those, but we wanted to connect with a really healthy ecclesiology in other words, a healthy understanding of how the local church works, because I was nervous with some of these organizations that you could go and have a great mountaintop experience, but not be connected with the local church understanding, both there or here. You come back and kind of walk away and go like, well, that was cool, but then what do I do day to day? And so we wanted to develop people with our long-term Envision workers. We have 70 of them now. 70 full-time workers with Envision, missionaries, both in the U.S., 8 sites. Some of you have been connected to the Watts site in Los Angeles. It was my privilege to help all of those domestic sites get off the ground, and that was a really encouraging season with Envision when those sites were growing. But we've seen a couple thousand people a year now over the last several years visit Envision sites through short-term trips or internships, a couple hundred interns a year, go to these places for a month or a year. And we've seen, so the last missionary class, out of those 60 that we were trying to send, over 30 of them had their first touch point with the Alliance through Envision. They went on a trip or they were an intern and then they said, you know what, I think I can do this. I want to do this long-term. And they got some healthy development as a soul care development, spiritual life development and missional understanding in that place. We have partnerships with Crown College and ATS so that if you go for a year, you could do kind of a gap year thing with Crown and get a full year of Crown College in Minnesota credit while you're doing your Envision internship. There's all kinds of opportunities to do these outside-the-box things. And I will just say one last thing about Envision. We have a newer program called Give Back. So some of you in the room are like, yeah, it's too late for me to do an internship. Well, we actually had a number of people in their 70s and 80s coming to us doing internships, but it was odd to call Al, 81-year-old guy, an intern who's going to Africa, who you know, has a lot of experience in life and was actually a former missionary, and now he's an Envision intern. So we created this program called Give Back. And Give Back is for those who are you know, in middle age, actually maybe not even middle age. We've had people in their 30s connect with Give Back because they already had some professional experience. But essentially, Give Back is for people with some skills to give that go, I could do a consulting thing or maybe go and help with. So I'll give you a couple quick examples. We had a business guy in Minnesota who was partnering with our coffee house church plant in Taiwan with Chris and Jamie Odell at Aroma. And he said, I'd like to go and talk him through sort of scaling this business. And so he gave back on his own dime, went and talked to them about that and how they could, you know, create a brand that could be expanded in Taipei and all those kind of things. We've had a business guy in Southern California who never traveled internationally, was really successful, and his wife passed away of cancer. He's in his 60s. He came to us and he said, hey, his name is Dennis. He said, I have this passion for the Middle East, but I have no training, but I really know how to do business. And he said, is there a program for me? So we had him sign up through Give Back. He came and did some training. He actually lived in Iraq for a year. And he saw people come to faith. He coached our young team through business practices and leadership there and was able to truly give back in a way that was very meaningful to him. He came back. His life was completely changed. He saw his life in Southern California differently. But he made a huge impact on the place that he went. So the other thing that we kind of look at with Give Back is if you had capacity financially, but were like, I can't go anywhere, but you said, hey, I'd like to maybe invest in sort of a startup ministry somewhere around the Alliance or get in on, you know, something to be on the front end of a team, we can talk about that as well in terms of investing in the Alliance in some interesting ways. So that's Envision. I talked about this. There's more room for more Alliance people to be more involved than that has been true in a long time. So the key strategic question is one of balance, and that's what the leadership is wrestling with. What is the right balance of broad serving competencies and one of church development and church planting competencies? And I believe that they're striking that right balance. For instance, out of our 700 workers, 450 of them work for Access. So still the majority of our workers are involved in frontline church planting, church development, and reproducing church models. But it's broadening, and that's a good thing. So I'm not going to, you don't care about this part, or this part. I will talk about this, that these are really the three, and you heard these mentioned in the Regions Beyond video. These are the three big objectives for Alliance missions and actually also church ministries in the U.S., would say these are our three primary objectives or strategic objectives for us. It's to serve communities well, it is to multiply church networks, and to develop people into leaders. Those are really the three things that drive. So all of our, you know, big initiatives and all of our structures have to be seen in at least one of these categories. And so you'll see more and more about these three. We call them the big three in the office, the big three strategic. So if we want to see multiplying church networks, we've got to serve communities and stay to develop people. So I'm going to say this again. If we want to see long-term multiplying church networks, many times the first access point is serving communities, but we've got to stay long enough to develop the people well to lead. Because if we pull out too quickly without having developed the leaders, then many times the ministries collapse because we've done it really through a Western model that could work for us but doesn't work well for them. And I'll just briefly talk about this and then we're done. So essentially, what we're moving toward is that this whole box will be called GCF, but we're on a 3-year journey to get there. We started at Council 2019, and our desire is that every time somebody would give to the Alliance through the Great Commission Fund or in any way, it would bless all of the different things that we're doing. Because up until now, if you gave to the GCF, it only blessed part of what we were doing. Then you had to give specifically to Comma or Marketplace or whatever to make sure that they got a piece of it. Or you could partner with a direct worker or structure or anything that motivates you or that you care about, and we will celebrate it equally as if you gave an undesignated dollar to the Great Commission Fund or to your church ministry fund here in your missions fund as you give through your church. And that is a significant shift, even though it feels maybe like big deal, because every year, about $60 million has been given to Alliance Missions on average, but we've only been reporting on $40 million of it. So $40 million has been the GCF budget, but we've been raising a lot of other money. Why? Because we've needed it. We've needed other money to support ministries and work funds and all these kind of things. And we've been, you know, doing, letting things grow like Envision and Marketplace Ministries, and they're all good, but we haven't had a true view. So when we've been reporting, even to pastors or local churches, we've said, hey, we're at 92%. We're at 92% of that 40 million. We might be at 100% of the other 20. So we needed a view that could report accurately on what is actually going on. But we also needed to say, however you want to partner, we're excited. If you want to partner with a worker, we're stoked. If you want to partner with a specialized structure, great. If you want to just give through your church and say, hey, we trust San Jose Christian Alliance Church to do what they need to do, then great. We're excited about all of it. Our hope and John's hope is that every local church would hit that 10% mark, and you guys are well beyond that here in the way that you partner, in that 10% of the money that comes in to a local church would go to support mission activity. This graphic will be blended, where it's really kind of going back and forth and blended in the way that we talk about finances. And the last thing I would say is that there will always be a little box on the outside for special projects. There'll always be like the hospital that we've got to build that's a time-sensitive thing, or you know, we are moving into a new CRM in the Alliance. And if one of you is excited about that, that'd be awesome. There are some projects that are on the side that we've got to fund and that we've got to, in order to serve our missionaries and our body well, but that won't be long-term projects and that won't be year-over-year kind of things, and that won't probably show up within that $60 million. But those are changes that we're moving to. So, I think we have 10 more minutes. Okay. That was a lot of information. Some of it might have felt more motivating than others. But I'm curious if it did spark any questions about these things or anything else that you'd like to ask me, like why have I been loyal to the Cleveland Browns for my whole life and those kind of things. Yes. So we have new brochures that will be distributed now. If you could take like one per family, I think we might have enough for that, that really in tangible ways show you a lot of what is on this PowerPoint, the new face of Alliance Missions, the structures, the way we partner, those kind of things. So you can, maybe this will spark a question for later, but anybody have a question as those are being handed out? Yes. Yeah.
You used the term gospel disparity, and I think that's, and Annie and I, who were both educators, we were saying some of your terminology, actually, if I see it in the context of education, it's somewhat similar.
Yes.
And when I say there's, when I, as a teacher, say there's disparity in learning,
right,
then I immediately go to a differentiated instruction. So when you say disparity of gospel, do you mean it but as in disparity of gospel for in any region? It could be applied to San Jose, it could be applied to anywhere, or disparity of gospel in terms of unreached people, unreached areas.
Great question. So I would say it's actually yes to both, but the way I've been using it today is really talking about places that have less than 2% of people in the region who would say that they're following Jesus, and therefore the touch point In other words, if you've read a Joshua Project result or something, how many doors you have to knock on in order to meet somebody who's a Christian or who have heard, because most stats tell us that you have to hear the gospel presentation clearly 7 times before you are willing to even make a decision whether you like it or not. And so disparity has to do with how long does it take for somebody to have those 7 touch points. But more and more in our country, there are places, especially in cities like San Jose and others, where there are pockets that actually don't have much access to the gospel rising. And where there is disparity, where there's like this neighborhood's getting a whole lot of attention and this neighborhood isn't, or this people group is and this people group isn't. And so there's a healthy blending, I think, in the next 15 years of what our strategies are internationally and what our strategies are in the U.S. So the story we're going to talk about in this new campaign that you'll see we will launch, 12 new pathways that are being created for gospel presence, and one of those is in Atlanta, Georgia. So for the first time, you're going to see a U.S. story show up in an international kind of thing because we have this place where there are refugees moving in, there are all kinds of people moving in, and we actually, as a side note, there's an unreached people group. The Joshua Project says 0.0% of those people are following Jesus. The first person from that people group came to faith this summer in Atlanta as a result of our Envision ministry there in Envision Atlanta, the very first convert in the history of the world in that people group. And so there is a gospel disparity. We could talk more because I think I know where you're going, but I think the way I'm using the term is really about unreached people, lack of gospel access. Thank you. Great question. Yes. Yes.
Yellow.
Oh, yeah, sorry. So for the marketplace ministry, can you support those missionaries? So
yes.
You know, in terms of pastoral care, is there your conferences, counseling?
Yeah.
What are ongoing things that you support those?
Yep, that's a great question. So I'll give you the broad strokes. The Marketplace Ministries folks all have, and Rachel's actually learning more about this, so I don't know if you want to answer this, but they all have a coach or a counselor sort of assigned to them. There's an annual retreat conference that they all come to. So the next one will be in June in Spain, where all from all over the world they'll join together. There are, because they have a regional kind of point person, there are touch points, whether it's a couple times a month or whatever is set up between those people. In the vetting process, there's a lot established, like these are what these people are going to need. And financially, normally most of their healthcare costs are paid for by the Alliance, and then their business pays for a lot of their local salary.
Just to bring it, make it more personal, when Jack and Y were in China, they were with Marketplace Ministries. So just to bring it more personal to our church. Any other questions?
John. How many mics does it take?
Talking about the marketplace as well as common services, because these are all highly specialized people that we're sending. So what kind of theological training are required on these people?
So it really depends on the different context that they're going into. So it's a little bit case by case with comma and marketplace. Many comma workers have the 30 hours of Bible and 15 hours of missions that is required as kind of a baseline for most of our access workers as well, but not all of them do. It would be more seldom to see our marketplace ministries workers with that, but they have a whole vetting training component that marketplace requires before they're allowed to be sent. To carry sort of the banner of the Alliance. So there are kind of applications and all this kind of stuff, but Marketplace would be the least requirements in terms of Bible and theology as the other three structures would have. Envision and Comma are pretty similar. Access would have the highest, then it would kind of go Envision and Comma, and then Marketplace. And part of that is just a function of if you're a business person and you're, like, a lot of times you get transferred, right? And so you're going to be there in 3 months. It's like, I don't have time to take a year break and go get trained, and then I'll get, you know, it's like, I'm going with whatever. What can I do? And then I'm only going to be there for a 3-year contract, so then I'm going to return. So that happens at times. But again, we have a lot of, I mean, one of my good friends, Vicky Chu, is with Marketplace Ministries in China for the last 10 years. And Vicky is, you know, has an MDiv and is trained in all these ways. But because the nature of her ministry was primarily marketplace in nature, she was doing a counseling center and reproducing that. So it does vary even within marketplace. Yes.
Hospital and medical clinics that Alliance.
Yes. So we have a number of hospitals around the world. We have a couple of wholly owned Alliance hospitals. Our newest one is in Honduras. That's actually seeing a lot of great traction. But we have one in Bongalo that many of you have heard about, and in Kuchala, Mali. The stats on the, and again, some of those hospitals showed up in the Alliance World Tour last year that you saw, but the thousands of people that have been treated. And then we have springing up medical clinics in new and different kinds of places now, and that's part of the breadth of the work. So we have these three kind of major hospitals that are fairly significant. But then we have medical ministries, I would say, in every area of the world. We have dental clinics through CAMA. Dental clinics have popped up in three different places in the last 3 years, I believe. So I'm sorry, I don't have all of the locations, but those are the broad strokes. More and more, we are opening doors for medical professionals who are saying, hey, I want to serve with the Alliance because, again, there's such medical need, and actually just healthcare in general. We have a lot of healthcare opportunities. I believe in the next 20 years, there will be a lot of health because... there's different ways to bring healing to areas. There's spiritual healing. There's certainly the Lord heals people physically, but sometimes you can eradicate diseases in places with coordinated efforts. And so I believe the Alliance will be a part of that. We're networking with some kind of high-powered healthcare professionals right now on some of those questions. Maybe one last question, and then we'll go to break. Yeah.
So I see how... there's an evolution of the Alliance evolving, right? And what sort of hit home with me was that sense of globalization,
yeah,
where we're not just going out, but people are coming in. And you mentioned that, you know, when we see less than, I think, 2% of a people group, right? So even within our own city here, right, in San Jose, you have parts of the city,
that's right,
that are so wealthy, so well-fed spiritually, and then you have the other end who are living homeless, who are without hope, without... How is a lot... I mean, traditionally, I think it's been the role of the local church,
yep,
to look out for... But because the disparity is so huge now, it is almost impossible for a single local church to address, even though it's a local issue. How is the Alliance as an organization,
yeah,
coming to this granularity? I know it's really hard to,
yeah, I mean that,
to come down to that granularity.
Yeah, that's a long question in some ways. It's a good question. This is kind of the beauty of why to be a part of a denomination and why we're structured in regions and in cities, because you have people who are helping and you know, this church, like last week, a couple of your pastors were at CCA in New York. Those kind of networks provide opportunities to have different kinds of conversations on how to work together. I don't think that the Alliance itself from a national office is going to start coming into cities and saying you have to do it this way to work together, because that's really not the way we do things. We really try to empower local churches to decide those things. However, from a district standpoint, this is partly why we have 8 Envision sites now. And literally the reason we did our first Envision site in Cleveland was because we had 10 urban church plants, a ton of poverty, but it was very difficult for the churches to work together without an excuse. And without feeling like who owns this, and if it doesn't go well, then like we're going to blame this church, or even the territorial, like if we reach people, which church will they go to? That kind of thing. So we had Envision come in and set up their ministry to coordinate the efforts of those churches together to minister to primarily West African, Syrian, and all these refugee populations, but also the poor African American community, specifically in Cleveland. But that was all in coordination with the district who really wanted to see that happen. So I think that happens a lot of times on the regional, district, and kind of organic church network basis in those places. So.